We are studying the book of Genesis. I'm on page 50. Genesis 6, 9. Restoration requires recreation and sanctification. These are the records of the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his time. Noah walked with God, and Noah became the father of three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now the earth was corrupt in the sight of God. The earth was filled with violence. God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way upon the earth. We are about 1,900 years since creation. The earth has spiraled down from the heights that it was created to the caveman, basically, to the scenario where people are killing one another at will, all manner of corruption upon the earth. And the Bible notes that it was filled with violence. We would typically think that God would punish the earth because of sexual sin or whatever, but it was violence, the way that people were slaughtering one another, killing one another, that caused God to get to the place where he thought the earth needed a scan disc and a reboot. We needed to start over. You notice there's a lot of violence in the world, and that has escalated a great deal in our day, especially as it relates to us. We see so much going on, and one of the things that the sheer ugliness of it when we see it. And we can see that what God was looking at was a scenario where there was only 8 people left in the whole world who were still walking with him. Given enough time, God knows, God knew that it would be, they would all be gone. He would lose the entire species of human beings. And so what happened is God decided he had to step in and do something in order to save the species. He's down to 8 people following after God. Spiritual death begets progressive spiritual and physical corruption. The wages of sin is death. When Adam and Eve fell, the Spirit of God left them and was no longer with them on a daily basis. And as the generations went along, they became more and more corrupt, their descendants. Soul rot in the human creation. Spiritual death begets physical death, and violence abounds. Many examples exist in our own time. Rwanda and other African genocide. You can name lots of nations in Africa. You can name lots of nations in South America. You can name lots of nations in the Middle East. You can name lots of nations in Eastern Europe, all over the globe. Middle Eastern Islamic death culture, the American Indian genocide, South American drug culture, murder, kidnapping, individual sexual predators, child and family murders are all examples in our day. Today, our video games exalt violence and death. The big selling games that our children play with are all about murder, mayhem, killing, war, death. So the culture of violence is growing in our world, even as it was in the time of Noah. This has increased dramatically in our lifetime. People in America are starting to act out the violence, and this is a sign of our present-day soul rot. Now we've got people coming out of nowhere, shooting people, policemen just walking up and shooting people, going into theaters and shooting people, going into churches and shooting people. We have a culture of death and violence that has taken a center stage in our Christian nation. Then God said to Noah, "The end of all flesh has come before me. I'm looking at the end of humanity. I'm staring the end of humanity in the face. For the earth is filled with violence because of them. Behold, I'm about to destroy them with the earth. And make for yourself an ark of gopher wood, and you shall make the ark with rooms, and shall cover it inside and outside with pitch. And this is how you shall make it. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits, its breadth 50 cubits, its height 30 cubits. You shall make a window for the ark and finish it to a cubit from the top. Set the door of the ark in the side of it, and you shall make it lower, second, and third decks. Behold, I am going to bring a flood of water upon the earth to destroy all flesh in which the breath of life is from under heaven. Everything that is on the earth shall perish, but I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall enter the ark, and you and your sons, and your wife and your son's wife with you. And every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring two of every kind into the ark, and keep them alive with you, that you, they shall be male and female. And of the birds after their kind, the animals after their kind, and every creeping thing of the ground of its kind, two of every kind shall come to you to keep them alive. As for you, take for yourself some of all the food which is edible. Gather it to yourself, for it shall be food for you and for them. Thus Noah did according to all that God had commanded him. All right. God the Father, the steward of all creation, sees that it's going to end. It's going to destroy itself. Mankind was morally dead or dying. God merely flushed it away with a lot of water. Redemptive God goes to a great length to save Noah, the righteous remnant. There's a very important component to Noah's obedience to God. Noah obeyed at great short-term cost to himself. Noah spent 100 years building a boat on a mountaintop, hundreds of miles from the sea, in a world that had never seen rain. The Bible tells us that until the time of the flood, that a mist used to come up from the ground to water the vegetation, to fill up the rivers, etc., etc. Remember that when the earth was created, it was created in an atmosphere that's like a terrarium. The water was pulled back. This water that was pulled back came into the atmosphere and froze. And that was called the rakia in Hebrew, the dome, the firmament, various ways, the canopy, or various ways it's translated. And that created this terrarium-like environment. So we get big animals, we get large growth, all this sort of thing. And that's what the earth looked like until the time of the flood. So it had not rained. If you've ever had a terrarium at home, you know it just mists all the time. And if you've ever lived or been around a rainforest, you know that. That's how the earth was watered up until this particular time. Basically what God's going to do is he's going to wind up melting all this, we'll get to that, this rakia, and causing it to fall down upon the earth and flush everything off the bones of the earth to the poles. We'll get to that as we go along. But Noah went and built a boat hundreds of miles from the sea in a world that had never seen rain. And he did it for 100 years. It's a big boat. It's a big boat. He had three sons and their wives, he and his wife. Chances are extraordinarily, highly likely, he had many other sons and daughters, he would have. But they were not there. They had left home and they had become part of the world. And he had to listen to all of the naysayers and whatever for all that particular time, calling him an idiot and laughing at him and poking fun at him. And it was a good place to go when you're drunk on Friday night, you want to throw stones or something. It's a good place to go do that.
What is gopher wood? I've never heard of that before.
Hmm?
Gopher wood.
Gopher wood. Gopher wood is a common wood found in the area. Gopher wood is a hard wood.
Okay.
I don't know much more about it than that. But he was ridiculed by all who saw his strange obedience to God. Obedience to God in our world is going to make us look strange. We're going to look weird. We're going to look different. And we need to be willing to do that. Jesus said, if you are not ashamed of me, I will not be ashamed of you before my Father. If you're not ashamed to confess me as your Lord and Savior, as your King, as your most important person in your life, I will not be ashamed of you. Noah had most assuredly relatives outside the boat, probably even other children. Compassionate Noah had to resist the cries for help. Once the door was closed and the rains came and the waters began to rise, Noah would have had to listen for 40 days and 40 nights until the boat lifted up as they were banging on the door trying to get in. People he knew, sons and daughters in all likelihood. Obedience to God is often very costly to our humanity. Covenantal God starts over with Noah, the animals, and all created earth. God would have had to put it into the hearts and minds of the animals to come to Noah and to cease carnivorous activity for a period of time. Now, remember that prior to the fall of man, there was a collegiality between God and the animal kingdom. And the animals were not carnivorous. Man was not carnivorous. The lion ate straw like the ox. The child played in the adder's den. And we're told in millennial reign that the same thing will happen again, that once the earth is restored in its pre-fall format back to the Garden of Eden, and Jesus rules and reigns for 1,000 years, that during that lifetime a number of things will happen. People will live to be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years old, as at the beginning. It says that if a person dies at 100, they will be thought of as having died as a child and accursed because of only such a short life. It says that men will have the lifespan of trees. Think of the sequoias. The Bible talks about the fact that on that particular time frame, the waters of the earth will be healed by the water that flows from out the throne of God. And that the trees on the banks of the river will have fruit 12 months of the year. That the leaves on the trees will be medicine for people, and that will be used to prevent miscarriages. That the child will play in the adder's den. Once again, the collegiality between man and animals, the collegiality between men and men that was there, the collegiality between men and God, the community, covenantal relationship. And for all this to happen for Noah, not only did he need to build this boat and build it according to the way God told him to build it, and we'll see as we talk about its structure how thoughtful it was, but it was not only that, but he also had to put it into the hearts of animals to come see Noah. Now, one of the nice things, one of the things to consider is that today there's probably, yeah, I don't know, 1,000 varieties of cat. You know, maybe 1,000 varieties of dog. There's probably hundreds of varieties of horse, you know, whatever. Well, this is long before all that would happen. So you wouldn't have all that many kinds of cats. And, you know, you would have basic cats and whatever. So the Lord was able to cause, if we believe our story, these people to come, were drawn to Noah, to Noah's boat, in an orderly fashion. And they came in with the attitude of getting along with one another, which was what it would have been like prior to the fall. God was able to do that in them. We're going to see here in just this minute that not only was there two of each kind of animal in the ark, but there was actually 7 of the clean animals, not just 2. So there was at least 2 of each kind, but we're going to see here that there was at least 7 of the clean animals. Then the Lord said to Noah, "Enter the ark, you and all your household, for you alone I have been have seen it righteous before me in this time. You shall take with you every clean animal by 7s, a male and a female, and of the animals that are not clean, 2, a male and a female. Also the birds of the sky by 7s, male and female, to keep offspring alive on the face of the earth. For after 7 more days, I will send rain upon the earth for 40 days and 40 nights, and I will blot out from the face of the land every living thing that I have made." And Noah did according to all that God had commanded him. Now, you want to have more clean animals than unclean animals, because after the flood, God's going to tell them that they should start eating animals. One of the reasons for this scientifically would be that once the rakia is destroyed, the protective cover from the toxicity of outer space would be gone, and we would wind up having much shorter lifespans. They would need the protein, et cetera, et cetera. These are scientific suggestions for why this was the case. Prior to the time of Noah's flood, animals were only meant to be sacrificed to God. Now, the first 2 animals that were killed by God to provide covering for Adam and Eve. The wages of sin is death, and that includes the death of everything in the earth. The earth was, the men were not supposed to eat animals, but they did, because they disobeyed God and everything else. They ate the food of the gods, as it were. But after the flood, they're going to be told that they need to start eating animals. And so they need more of the clean animals they can eat than of the unclean that they're not going to eat. So, rain. What is rain? Man has never seen rain before. We talked about this. More on this to come. Now, this is the account of the heavens and the earth when they were created. In that day, the Lord made the heavens and the earth. I'm reading back to Genesis 2. Now, no shrub of the field was yet in the earth, no plant of the field was yet sprouted. For the Lord God had not sent rain upon the earth, there was no man to cultivate the ground. But a mist used to rise from the earth and water the whole surface of the ground. This was the description of how the earth was watered back from Genesis 2. Genesis 7, verse 6. Now, Noah was 600 years old when the flood of water came upon the earth. Now, he was 500 years old when he started to build the boat. So that's where we get the 100 years. Then Noah and his sons and his wives and his sons' wives entered in with him into the ark because of the water of the flood. Of clean animals and animals that are not clean and birds and everything that creeps on the ground. There went into the ark to the by Noah two by twos, male and female, as God commanded Noah. And it came about that after 7 days that the water of the flood came upon the earth. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, on the same day, all the fountains of the deep burst forth open. The floodgates of the sky were open, and the rain fell upon the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. All right, Nancy and I used to live in San Antonio, and when we did, we went to this church, and the members of this church were largely the scientific people who manned the Southwest Research Institute there in San Antonio. And it was interesting to sit around and hear them talk about science and creation and all that sort of thing. Very interesting people. Well, one of the things that we learn is that if you're looking for a scientific explanation for the flood, etc., is that what happened here, and scientists agree this happened. They don't all agree when it happened. What happened is that at the core of the earth, the core of the earth is molten. It's fire. And trapped around the core of the earth were huge pockets of water, large, what we would call seas, trapped by the tectonic plates and everything that held them there up against the core. And as time goes by, what happens is the core heats up the water, and little by little by little, the pressure of the water rises because of the heating of the water until it gets to be stronger than the pressure of the tectonic plates holding it down. And then when that happens, the tectonic plates shift. When that happens, the water, which is now heated up and pressurized, shoots up through the fissures like Old Faithful, goes up to the Rakia, melts the Rakia, and then all the water that used to cover the earth before the Lord pulled it back to reveal dry land comes back down on the earth. Matter doesn't get destroyed, it just changes its form. So that would have caused everything to, all the water that's there to come back down and cover the earth. Now the shifting of the tectonic plates would have created seven continents, and that would have created seven oceans because of the trough in between them. The mountain ranges and all that would have been lifted up. Before all of this, we had Pangaea, one flat earth with relatively little rise or fall in the topography. Now we've got seven big mountains and seven great valleys for all that to happen. So the water comes down and it flushes all that's on the bones of those mountains to the bottom, to the cores, to the exterior, hiding all the fossils, etc., etc. The account is rich in historical and geological data for a reason. In the 600th year, the second month, 17th day of Noah's life, 7 days after they entered the ark, the fountains of the great deep burst open. They just shot up out of the belly of the earth and went up into the sky, the heat melting the Rakia. So thermal geysers shoot into the atmosphere, melting the Rakia, the force of the falling Rakia. Water flushes every loose and unattached object to the poles, creating carbon deposits where none would ordinarily be found. Writing is difficult, paper is rare in Moses' day, so this data must be meaningful because he gives us a great deal of it. Whenever we see in the ancient writings a great deal of detail, we're usually they're making a claim to historicity. If they want to talk about something metaphorically, they give you a broad statement. But if they start giving you all these exact details, you know that they're claiming historicity, because they would have they wouldn't waste the paper to write a metaphor of that exactitude. So this account of the flood implies detailed, accurate, oral transmission of data for over 1,000 years. Memorized oral history focuses on only the most important details. We are meant to see this as an historical event, not an allegory. You would not memorize these details if they were not important or not true. When the record, written record is detailed, it is meant to be taken as fact. That's just Bible study. Now, really, Moses does not start writing the Bible until 1400 B.C. Adam was created in 4400 B.C. So for 3,000 years, we have oral history. And the way that people memorize their oral history is through what they call taladots. We call them genealogies. This guy begot this guy. This guy begot this guy. This guy begot this guy. Whatever. And children are always taught by their elders their genealogy. They're a particular genealogy. And as they're taught the genealogy, then information is hung off of it like a Christmas tree. It was during the time of this person that fire was found. It was during the time of this person that iron was invented. During the time of this person, people started living in cities. That's how Aboriginal people teach their children their history. And because they have no written formats, their genealogies, their memories for genealogical stuff is quite strong. Once we start having books and things, we can forget about a lot of that, store it in books and go to other things. Besides, today we have a whole lot more to remember than they would have. But if you go to the Aboriginal countries of this world, New Zealand and Australia and place some of the mountainous places, South America and whatever, you will find people who still have oral genealogies as the basis of their history, because that's how that was done. Moses was the first one to put all this stuff into record. So when you're reading your Bible and it says this guy begot this guy and this guy begot this guy, and you're going, what? You know, what is this here for? Why is this here? If writing is expensive and difficult, and you don't have much paper and you don't have whatever, why would you write all of this whole list of names? Why would you say that this person lived 180 years and then had this person, and he lived 180 years, had this person? And the answer is because if you just take and follow those dates back, you can go all the way back to creation based on what's given you in all of this. What did Noah and his family live on and eat before the flood? Well, the answer is grains, fruit, vegetables, milk, and eggs. The Garden of Eden food. It's not a bad diet. Actually, grains, fruits, vegetables, milk, and eggs. The violent sinners were probably already eating meat, which had heretofore been given to God and was forbidden to them. So what did the animals live on or eat on in the ark? Probably grain, hay, and milk. That's what they would have done.
Rain?
Yeah.
Will that be the same in the millennial reign?
In the millennial reign, we will have the scenario once again. The lion will lay down with the lamb. The lion will eat straw like the ox. Child will play in the adder's den. There'll be no harm on my holy mountain. The only animals that will be sacrificed will be for the worship of God. And there will be shared meals, just like there is in all sacrifice. But other than that, people will eat grains, fruits, vegetables, eggs, you know, whatever. Means that not only did they not bite, but it probably means that they weren't all that poisonous. But one of the things when you read Genesis, one of the things that's interesting is you got this story of Eve, and she's walking along, and there's a serpent in a tree, and he's telling her this story. See? So what happens is she goes home and she says to him, "Well, the serpent told me that we should eat the apple, we'll be fine." What would be the first thing you would say when you went home? A serpent talked to me. There was no shock or surprise that the serpent talked to her. We have a collegiality, a covenantal relationship between men and animals at that particular time, and there was no hostility. Men learned to fear animals, and animals learned to fear men after the fall. The Bible talks about that. God put a fear of man upon the animals. All of that is going to get undone and restored in the millennial reign. But this is, so that's what we're looking at there. Now, Genesis 7, I call this Noah's Mediterranean cruise.
What kind of cabin did he have?
Yeah, Sam will get your cabin set up for your Mediterranean cruise. Okay. On the very same day, Noah and Shem and Ham and Japheth, the sons of Noah, Noah's wife, three wives of his sons went and entered the ark. They and every beast after its kind, and all the cattle after their kind, and every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth after its kind, and every bird after its kind, all sorts of birds. They went in the ark to Noah, two by twos of all flesh, which was in which was the breath of life. And those that entered, male and female, of all flesh, entered as God had commanded him. The Lord closed it behind him. The flood came upon the earth for 40 days. The water increased and lifted up the ark so that it rose above the earth. The water prevailed and increased greatly upon the earth. The ark floated on the surface of the water, and the water prevailed more and more upon the earth, so that all the high mountains everywhere were under the earth, under the heavens were covered. This is the first reference to mountains anywhere in the scriptures. And that's because they weren't there until then. Now, this water came, and for 40 days and 40 nights, the Rakia fell back down upon the earth. And as it did, it rose higher and higher and higher, till it finally got to Noah's boat, and it lifted it up, and it kept falling until it had covered everything that was there. Same water that God pulled back to reveal dry land to create the earth is the water that came back down. So the water prevailed 15 cubits higher, and the mountains were covered. Now, a cubit is the distance between the wrist and the elbow. And as you imagine, some people's cubit is longer than other people's cubit. We don't have scientific exact measurements in those days. We don't until 1850. It's not until we get to about 1850 A.D. that we begin to get exact scientific measurements. We talked about this earlier on, but you know the numbers that we use, I think the decimal point wasn't created until like 800 A.D. So we didn't have that kind of stuff. All the flesh that moved on the earth perished, birds and cattle and beasts, every swarming thing that swarms upon the earth and all mankind, and all that was on dry land, and all whose nostrils was the breath of the spirit of life died. Thus he blotted out every living thing that was upon the face of the land, from man to animals to creeping things to birds of the sky, were blotted out from the earth, and only Noah was left, together with those who were with him in the ark. And the water prevailed upon the earth 150 days. So once the earth was covered, it stayed covered for 150 days. So once again, we've got this detail, rich historical geological detail, which is implying historicity. We're not going to have this if it's not. The number of passengers, the length of the rain, the length of the flood, water levels such as 15 cubits above the tallest mountain, etc., etc., etc. Prior to Noah's flood, there were no mountains. The mountains and the oceans were created at the time of Noah's flood by the shifting of tectonic plates in the 600th year of Noah's life. In the second month, on the seventh day, the month on the same day, all the mountains of the earth burst forth. The floodgates of the sky were open. So this is the first mention of rainfall, et cetera, et cetera. Some people ask, why would God eliminate innocent animals? Well, first of all, mankind would have been dangerously outnumbered by animals if there had not been controlled the amount of animals that they had. And the second thing is that not all animals are innocent. You know, a bad man has a bad dog. If a man teaches his dog to be vicious, then you have a vicious dog. There's not all the animals were innocent. Remember too that God is God, and He made us, and He can kill us with total morality. God is able to God gives life, and He can take away life and not be sinful. We're sinful when we take away life because we're not God. But the truth of the matter is that God can take out whomever He will. God remembered Noah and all the beasts and all the cattle that were with him in the ark. God caused a wind to pass over the earth, and the water subsided. And one of the things that happened was is at some point in time, after God had reached this particular place, God decides it's time to change the scenario again. And so the Bible says that he breathed upon the waters. Now, once again, the scientists said well, what would happen is that the water would begin to evaporate into a mist or a gas that would rise up and collect up in the sky until it got heavy and then come down again. In other words, this created the rain cycle, which would not have been existent before all this time. So in this conversation here about God breathing upon the water, we get this description of the evaporation process, condensation process, and the cyclical nature of it. Also, the fountains of the deep and the floodgates of the sky were closed, and the rain from the sky was restrained. The water receded steadily from the earth at the end of 150 days. The water decreased, and in the seventh month, on the 17th day of the month, the ark rested upon the mountains of Ararat. And the water decreased steadily until the 10th month. In the 10th month, on the first day of the month, the tops of the mountains became visible. So, once again, we get historical and geological detail. I think we've covered most of this, tectonic plates shifting. Then it came about at the end of 40 days that Noah opened the window of the ark, which he had made. He sent out a raven, and it flew here and there until the water was dried up from the earth. And then he sent out a dove from him to see if the water was abated from the face of the land. But the dove found no resting place for the sole of her foot, so she returned to the ark, for the water was on the surface of the earth. Then he put out his hand, and he took her and brought her into the ark to himself. He waited another 7 days, and again he sent out the dove from the ark. And the dove came to him toward evening. Behold, in her beak was freshly picked olive leaf. So Noah knew that the water had abated from the earth. Then he waited yet another 7 days and sent out to the dove, but he did not return to him again. So in just 47 days from the reappearance of the flatlands, olive leaves are available for dove to find. This indicates that God has been at work on the land. It implies new creation behavior by God. If not, Noah and his family would have lived on a moonscape for many long ages of time. The same level of earth alteration and recreation is foretold by the prophets and by Jesus for the millennial reign. In 2 Peter 3, he says, "But according to his promise, we're looking for a new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells." Revelation 21 said, "I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven of earth and earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea." So we see the prophets and Jesus promising us that there's going to be yet another creation after the coming of the Lord. So what's happening here is a second creation after the fall of man. Yes?
So everything would have been destroyed. I never thought, actually, I'm editing this right now for him, and I read this yesterday, and I thought, oh my gosh, I never thought about that. But God really sort of recreated everything.
All right, let's look at this. So we have all this water trapped in the bowels of the earth. I've told you a story before. Y'all know what a double boiler is. You know, you put a pan on top and it bubbles and whatever. My mother used to make divinity candy for Christmas. So white, gooey stuff that you make and then you let it dry and it's like eating pure sugar. It's called divinity candy. And she used to make it. So she'd put all the ingredients in the top of this double boiler. And it would get all liquidy and whatever. And then she would take it and spoon it out and it would dry and become divinity. In other words, food for the gods, whatever. At any rate, my sister and I used to do all the dishes, and we would drop a few from time to time, and we eventually dropped this pan enough times that it got kinks in it. So she was making divinity one Christmas. I was about 11, 12, something like that. And she had this double boiler on, and she was making this divinity, but because the kinks in the pan pressed up against the side of the lower pan, it wouldn't bubble. It wouldn't bounce. And the pressure of the water grew to the point that it blew the pan straight up into her face. And she had glasses on or she'd be blind. So we had to take her to the hospital because she had this very hot, you know, very hot substance that, you know, just take it away would take skin away with it. It happened because we had dented the pan so much that it would not bubble, it wouldn't bounce to let the pressure be regulated, and so it grew to the place where it was finally strong enough just to blow the pan. That's an image I remember very vividly. And when I think about what happens is he's got the water in the belly, the water around the core. It's trapped by everything that's on top of it, which is all the earth. There's these tectonic plates. And it gets to the place where it no longer The pressure of the plates is no longer strong enough to fight against the pressure of the boiling water. And what happens, these plates shift. And then all that pent-up energy shoots these geysers up, like Old Faithful and whatever, all the way up into the Rakia. The Rakia, remember, is in our atmosphere above us. It is a frozen globe of water because of the temperature of outer space. And when this hot water from there hits that Rakia, it begins melting. We were going through a lot of conversation right now about the melting of the polar caps. Okay, it begins to melt, and as it melts, it falls back down upon the earth from which it had been pulled for the sake of creation. Now, when God made He made the earth, He made earth, and He had water covering it, and He pulled it back to reveal dry land. And the topography of the earth was, it was hilly. Hilly would be your best bet. There were no tall mountains. We know there's seven great continents, and there's all these mountain ranges and seven great oceans and all that. All of that would have been created by the flood. So all of that water comes down. When it comes down with great force. We're talking about a lot of water. And as it hits the bones of the earth, the rock that formed the mountains and where the ground is and everything, it flushes everything off of those bones. And so literally everything under that water, except fish and whatever vegetation remains for the fish below the water, is destroyed. So Nancy's right. By the time we get them in the boat, they're in the boat for a year, and then 47 days of this or that. In that time frame, God has had to recreate the earth. Because when they came out of this boat a year and 47 days later, they're coming into a place where the water's receded and there's land and there's trees and grass and all that sort of thing, and it's all dried out, some longer soggy and whatever, they're going to come off the boat into that. So there has to be a second creation after the flood.
It just struck me as you were talking about this that it was the first time that Noah and his family had felt wind, too, because they had been where the vapors would come up and they had the protection and they didn't have the wind cycles.
Very likely.
And probably cold they hadn't felt before, but since they were on top of a mountain, they probably felt cold.
Sam's right. When I say they're on top of a mountain, what they're on is a high place. But it really...
Even that was more than what they were accustomed to.
Yeah.
Just looking out and seeing the view, and you know how a mountain, especially if it doesn't have tall trees, usually has a breeze coming up.
Yeah. Well,
it would be a strange new world to them.
It would be in many ways, but Sam's right. It's not a mountain in the sense of K2 or whatever. It's just a high place, miles and miles and miles from the sea. There would be a lot of things that would be new to them, new world. So what happens is that God makes this covenant with Adam and Eve, and all of this goes on. Now He's made a covenant with Noah to start over again. Remember, we are all from Noah, as we would have all been from Adam. So it's... I've always told people it's not necessary if you don't wish to believe in a 7-day creation, but if you do, there are scientific basis for it. I do. I think it makes sense. Jesus and John and Paul and George and Ringo all thought that it made sense when they wrote, so it goes to me. But yes, their world would have been very, very different when it came out of the boat. One of the things about the ark that I thought was interesting was the whole shape of it. Somewhere in all of here, I do something on that, but I can't remember where it was. If you go back to the earlier reading where it talks about the size of the ark, it says here in Genesis 6, verse 15, so you make it 300 cubits long, 50 cubits broad, and 30 cubits high. Think of a cubit as about 18 inches or a foot and a half. So you got, some people's cubits are bigger than others. So you have something on the order of 400 to 450 feet long. This is not going to be a boat with a rudder. They don't need a rudder. This is going to be a floating barge is what this is. It's going to be 50 times be about 70, what is that, 75 feet wide, and it's going to be about 60, about 45 feet tall in the process. It's not going to be, it's going to be massive for its day, but it's not going to be huge by our standards. 450 feet is football field and a half. That's right. That's where I was going. It's a football field and a half, and in that, and then of course you got three stories, and they're apparently stacked one on top of the other. So you're going to have, it just has to bob in the water. They're not driving it anywhere. They're not steering it anywhere. It's just a floating. The people who are in the ark, the sons, Noah and his wife, and the sons and the daughters, were happy to be in the ark until the work started. And, you know, then it's like, you know, you've got to feed. Have you all ever seen the story on Noah with John Huston? It's an old movie with John Huston as Noah. It's an excellent, excellent rendition of all of that. It shows him taking care of the animals and, you know, like guys taking, he's taking straw over to the elephant, and he goes away, and the elephant's trunk goes over, grabs him back because he wants some more or whatever. They're milking everything they can in order to feed, you know, pouring milk into all this kind of stuff. Very, very interesting concept. Right, comments on any of this? Just real quick. Comments on any of this? Well, it's something to think about. I mean, it's the, you know, if you read this as historically accurate and true, which I do, then you have to start to think about, how does it work? How does it fit? How does this happen? How does that work? And like I said, you know, God is good that He has this way of taking us or bringing us into those experiences in life that we need. And we had this two-year period where God put us in San Antonio in this church with all of these scientists from the Southwest Research Institute. And we would sit around at like barbecues or whatever, potlucks, and listen to these guys talk about all kinds of things. You know, we talked about creation and motion, implied time, stars built on the way. All of that stuff comes from those conversations, which, by the way, you can also find out in the internet. Other people have said these kind of things. But it did prove very helpful to me. I don't really need to believe that the creation was seven literal days and Noah had a flood in order to be believe in God. But I do. I do. And if people don't, I don't think they're going to go to hell for it, because I don't think that's what the basis of salvation is. I just need to know that it's possible. And if it's possible, then I have no reason not to read it like it says.
I never had thought about God having to do some recreation. Mm-hmm. For them before they came out.
Well, yeah, you know, because you ask yourself.
It makes sense. I mean, they would need to burn wood to stay warm.
Well, they had 147 days, you know, for God to create an environment for them to get off the boat, you know. And so He has to do something so that they can get off the boat into a world.
Plant a little pine tree. How big would it be if it's
147? Well, I'll go back to those three things. God created with implied time, right? Mm-hmm. You give Adam a physical. All your best scientists with all your best equipment, you give him a physical the day after you know God made him. And the equipment will say he's 25-year-old male. He's been through puberty. He's lost all these teeth. He's got this, this, and this. It'll say he is 25 years old. It'll measure him as 25 years old.
Yeah.
And anything else God created would have to be have implied time in it. It would have to be this tree that he built would have to be a 14-year-old tree or a 200-year-old tree. He can't just, you know, it's not like he starts over and waits.
Yeah.
And the same thing is true. It said that God, the waters teem with the fish. And the same thing with the fish and the animals. When God created the animals, according to the way the Bible reads, He spoke them into existence. That means that one minute they're not there, and the next minute a school of fish are coming together, and there's the granddaddy fish and the daddy fish and the cousin fish and the aunt fish and the sister fish and all that sort of thing. There's probably a fish in the process of eating another fish, you know, a whale filling his mouth, in a moment in time. He creates in volume. And the other thing we're told is that he spread out the universe. He spread it out. What happens is that we have a star, we have light from a star that Adam sees the first day of his life. A starlight. We know that that star is 1.5 million light years away. And yet, Adam sees it the next day. What is that? Well, God creates the star on the way. He creates the light on the way. So the point is that we if we think of God as halfway smart, then we realize that when he creates the world, he has to create it in such a way that when Adam can walk into it, or Noah in this particular case, it's ready to eat, ready to wear. You know, it's ready to inhabit, which means that the creation, if that's what God did, would have to be created with implied time, in volume, in motion, and in just that particular manner. And that would be the same thing with him. Yes, dear?
Was there any symbolism to the birds that he chose, the raven and the dove?
I'm not that I know of. I think the thing is their natural nature to go out and look for stuff. I mean, I don't know who he chose. And I don't know that, you have to remember there would not have been that many types of animals. All right, something about, somebody pray us out.